We were talking during the break about farm. You need land, and a lot of the farmers, their most profitable crops are developers.
Yeah, that's the most profitable crop is a red tile roof. It's the last crop, but it's the most profitable crop.
And a lot of Arizona's grown up over the top of farm fields. What does it take to establish a new? I mean, you leave 10. Right now, y'all are on the 303. If you drive north on there past, you have the prison. There's a couple new warehouses that have popped up. Mm-hmm. Pebble Creek's out to the side. You can see jets coming in from Luke Air Force mm-hmm. Base with the landing strip. And there's a couple dairies right there underneath those grove trees. But all that farmland on both sides all the way up is the lion's share of it is y'all's.
We have a good share of that, yes. Uh-huh. That's one of our bases of operation. We also farm on the Salt River Pima Indian Reservation east of Scottsdale Community College. You can't see our farm from the 101, but you can see farms just like ours.
And who owns that land?
It's just different entities. There's some we lease from some developers. The Mormon Church is a longtime landowner out there that we lease a fair amount of property from. They're the ultimate long-term landholders. They buy properties, either operate them themselves or lease them to farmers like me. And then when the time is right, they sell that and go buy more.
And as the developments happen, what does it take to push the farming out? How far? When you drive that I-10 out to Courtside, you have a little bit of land there, but there's no water. The infrastructure, you don't have the canals, yeah. You don't have the wells.
No, my family started on 51st and Thomas. That was the first farm that my great-grandfather bought. That was one of the first parcels that John Long bought in 1956 for Maryvale. So all that, all of Phoenix, essentially, certainly below the canals or south of the canals, used to be some of the best irrigated farmland in the world, and now it's houses. But with that, the usage on that land of the water remains consistent. So it's not like you can go out further west or further south or anywhere out from the city core and have new land because there's no more water. And you know, that's okay. I mean, Phoenix is a great place to be. I wouldn't want to live here if there was only 250,000 people like there was when I was a kid, but it's a lot more fun now, and there's a lot more people to buy my carrots now. So that's the trade-off. But I don't know. I can't answer that. I hope that our policymakers will realize the value that agriculture provides and continue to try and work to keep the resources available for agriculturalists to continue to feed our country. I would certainly hate to see our food production, whether it's beef, dairy, or produce, us be reliant on another country.
Oh, amen. Yes. And that would hurt your organic market.
Yes.
Really
yes,
bad.
Yes.
We're also told by those that attempt to look at the crystal ball that a lot of our greatest opportunities in agriculture are on the tribal lands, and we've got plenty of tribal lands, and a lot of those tribal lands have the water. Hence, one of the reasons why you lease from one of the tribes with your farming. So, we still have more opportunity than we think we do. It always kind of tugs at the heart when we see some farmland go into red-tiled roofed homes, but we still have a lot of opportunity in agriculture here in Arizona.
And you had mentioned something interesting about what it takes to bring a crop organic, to bring a piece of
ground, yeah.
You have to let it sit for how long?
Any land can't have any inorganic compounds used on it for at least 3 years. So if our original organic farm that we've now had for 16 or 17 years, was a tract of tribal land that for various reasons nobody had farmed for about 7 or 8 years. So we leased that from the community, brought it in, and so it was instantly organic. It was also a struggle because the weed pressure on it and the was terrible.
Where's the Roundup? Let's clean this up.
No Roundup. No Roundup. Remember, just hose. Yeah. So, and we're actually transitioning some of our long-term, really good farmland now to for further organic. So it's driven by supply and demand, but. But yeah, that's why organic costs more, and really it has to, because it costs us a fair bit more to produce it that way.
AZFB.org, you can learn more about the Arizona Farm Bureau. Become a member. It was $59 a year for consumers to become a member, and that fund goes help support your lobbying, the Farm Bureau industry as a whole, and your local Arizona food market.
Right, and it's you become part of a family in reality, and certainly you get the benefits, some monetary benefits, especially discounts. But one of the neat things, too, when you become part of the Farm Bureau family is you're tied into families like the Rousseaus. I love to tell the story of Burl Rousseau, who is Will's aunt, and she was very active in the Farm Bureau in her heyday because the Rousseau family were so heavily involved in all types of agriculture like they are now. Well, she was the state chair of the Women's Leadership Committee. And while she came from the farming background, the farm family, we just have a lot of pretty exciting things that we do. And it makes me think, I can't help but use a metaphor. They were and are deeply embedded in the Arizona Farm Bureau. And it is truly a farm family. So many of our families here as it relates to Arizona Farm Bureau.
And you can get a pound of freshly cut and clean Russo Farms. You guys sound like you're just about in every grocery store.
We are, yes. We're fortunate in that both the retailers and obviously their consumers realize the value of local. It's less carbon footprint, less carbon impact on our ecology, and it's also a better value. All of our employees live here, shop here, spend their paychecks here. So we're fortunate in that. There's really no place that you go that won't have our products.
And for all of 2018, and the first Saturday of each month, we'll be talking about what is locally in harvest here in Arizona. Next month, we talk garlic. We need to find a garlic grower. I might have to take a trip over to Yuma and do that one live from that area. The following month in April is eggs. Beef is May, so then June must be National Dairy Month because we'll be covering dairy, and we've got the cars, and we've got the Rovies that we'll bring in for that. We'll be talking melons. We're talking corn into August. September, we bring in chilies. October, pork. November is our only non-edible. This is cotton, but we'll talk about table settings and where to find local cotton. We have the Yuma cotton that's so high.
High strength, high length. Pima cotton.
Pima cotton
is world renowned.
And then, of course, in December, eggnog, and we've got to bring Dan Heisen Dairy back in for their locally made eggnog. It's the Arizona Farm Bureau and Russo Family Farms. Thank you all for joining us this Saturday morning.
Thank you, Romy.
Pleasure. Thanks.